This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Now, Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, Truth in Broadcasting.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Greetings. There's so much going on in the news, so much to talk about, and we will be taking your calls throughout the day. I also want to try a little Tom Hartman Program listener straw poll on the Democratic primary. We'll be doing that in the second or third hour of the program as we move along, but it's the first hour of our program, and so as we have for over 3 years now, coming up on 4 years, in fact, it's time for Brunch with Bernie, our weekly conversation where Senator Bernie Sanders, I was going to start to say Congressman Bernie Sanders, was the longest serving independent member of Congress, the House of Representatives, in that body's history, and is now an independent in the United States Senate. Neither Republican nor Democrat, I think of Bernie Sanders as America's senator, and he will be taking your calls. Our toll-free number, 1-866-303-2270. And Senator Bernie Sanders, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you, Bernie. And it sounds like you're right here in the studio with me. You're coming in by ISDN?
Yeah, this is one of these very sophisticated Capitol Hill studios. But that's, don't get spoiled. Great. I don't know that we're always going to do it this way.
Okay, well, I think it sounds absolutely marvelous. The Center for American Progress just released a study this week showing that basically for every hour of programming like this on radio stations across the country, particularly those radio stations owned by the five largest media companies, there are 9 hours of right-wing talk radio. And this, of course, has this study now has all the right-wingers hysterical, saying that we're calling for a fairness doctrine and a monitoring of the airwaves and all this, which the Center for American Progress very much did not call for. But it does raise some troubling concerns about how
it sure does.
You know what's going on here in this country.
It sure does. Let's understand that we are a nation politically divided. In fact, now, at this particular moment, the Republicans, the support for the Republican ideology is declining. I think more and more people are looking at progressive alternatives. And yet, despite all of that, what you're seeing is in area after area in this country, major cities, Philadelphia, Boston, you know what? People can't even hear a progressive voice at all. And as the study indicates, the airwaves are filled overwhelmingly with right-wing talk shows. And by the way, Tom, some of them are right-wing extremist stuff, really hateful, ugly stuff. The answer, to my mind, is for us to begin the discussion as to why that is so. And I think if you think about it, what you will conclude is that the corporations, and there are fewer and fewer large media conglomerates that own and control what the American people see, hear, and read, and clearly their views are more sympathetic to these right-wing ideologues than to a progressive perspective. And second of all, the advertisers themselves play a very important role. It is no great secret that advertisers will put their money, in many cases, not all cases, into a perspective that they want to see get out there rather than to something that might threaten them in terms of asking them to be more environmentally responsible, treat workers with respect, pay their fair share of taxes, not support unfettered free trade, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So it is a big issue, and it raises the issue of concentration of ownership in America. And why I think it's important is that we're not going to have the kind of vibrant democracy that we need unless we are discussing the serious issues facing the middle class and working families of this country. And I'm not quite sure that corporate media wants us to do that.
Yeah, you know, I do a lot of affiliate visits where I just drop in on radio stations. In fact, we do a lot of events with them, and have talked with a lot of affiliates. And one of the things that I've found, you know, our radio stations around the country. One of the things that I've found, in fact, I've put together a 20-minute PowerPoint presentation that I do for sales forces for radio stations, is that the difference between very significant success, and there are some very, very successful progressive talk stations. For example, AM 620 KPOJ, where I'm broadcasting from here in Portland. And by the way, three out of the five counties in this metro area voted for Bush in both of the last two elections. It's not the most progressive city in the world. There are some very successful stations, and then there are the ones who are not at all successful. And what I found are the two major differences have to do with station management. If the station really cares about the station and puts the effort in to do what's called imaging, that is the good promotion of the station internally and externally, and good programming, number one. And number two, sales. Salespeople develop networks through their lives, and if you've got a sales force that for the last 15 years has been selling Rush Limbaugh, and they show up at the Republican Party events, and they know that the guy who owns this particular car dealer is a big Limbaugh fan and all that kind of stuff, and you ask them to sell progressive talk radio, they can't do it. They don't know how. Those radio stations that have hired dedicated sales forces and hired progressives who will show up at Democratic Party functions and take business cards and say, oh, you own the car dealership and you're a Democrat. Great, let's talk about advertising, because people don't always make rational decisions, like you pointed out. Tom, those stations are successful.
Well, I think you're really talking about, in a broad sense, is that for those people who are very concerned that our country is moving in the wrong direction, concerned about the incredible power that big money has, the fact that we don't have a national health care program, et cetera, they have got to perceive that media is a political issue. A political issue is not just Iraq, it's not just the environment, it's not just health care. It is media itself, because unless people can hear different perspectives, perspectives that reflect the realities of their own life, we're going to get sucked into Paris Hilton and Britney Spears and Annika Nicole Smith and every other actress who has a problem.
Right.
And I think what you are seeing is a craving on the part of the American people for serious discussion about why ordinary folks, for example, are working longer hours for lower wages. Why is the middle class in America declining despite a huge increase in technology? Well, honest people will have different points of view on that, but you got to discuss that issue. What I am finding right now is I think that there is increased disenchantment with what's happening in Washington from all over the country. I think people believe that what goes on in the White House and in Congress is not relevant to their lives. And to a significant degree, that's true. But the other reality is that the media is a lot more interested in talking about celebrity gossip and sensationalism and crime rather than the issues that impact tens of millions of American people. Why is it that the United States is the only major country in the world that does not have a national health care program guaranteeing health care to all people? Is it true, as my right-wing friends will tell you, that we have the best health care system in the world? Or, in fact, is it true, as I believe it is, that in terms of many of the indices, healthcare indices, we are way behind many other countries? Why is it that our people work the longest hours of any people in the industrialized world, and that there are studies out there where people sometimes don't even have 1 week paid vacation, Tom? Don't have 2 weeks paid vacation. My God, why is that? Now, honest people can disagree, and I conservatives have a point of view, progressives have a point of view. Let's talk about it. But what is going on, and what upsets me very much about the media and corporate control over the media, and I don't think it is an accident, there is a deliberate attempt to deflect attention away from the realities of American life. There was a study that came out recently, Gallup poll, 70% from a Gallup poll, 70% of Americans believe, despite President Bush's assertions, they believe the economy is getting worse, not better. There was another poll that came out not so long ago. By a 2-to-1 majority, people think life for the middle class in America has gotten worse in the last 10 years. Okay? Now, why is that? We need that discussion. We need people to turn on the radio and say, that is what my life is about. Yeah, it is true that I'm working two or three jobs, and I'm glad that somebody knows it. It's true I can't afford to pay my electric bill. Or I'm really outraged that compared to the rest of the world, this country is doing relatively little in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. So what gets to me about the media is not just that it is by and large right-wing, and including some really way-out people who are full of hate, whether it's against the women or against gays or against minorities, whatever it may be, but that as a nation, when you turn on television, you go through 50 channels, and you're not going to find somebody talking about the realities of the life of the average American. And then, not too surprisingly, that person says, nobody cares about me. Why should I vote? Why should I participate in the political process? And all of that makes our job in Washington a lot harder.
Yeah. And now we have the energy, the Employee Free Choice Act. Just take a quick shot at that. We just have
sure.
a couple
That's
of seconds.
That's going to come up next week. Basically, what that says is that one of the reasons the middle class is declining is we're seeing a decline in unionization. And one of the reasons we're seeing a decline in trade unionization in America is harder and harder for workers who play by the rules, who do what they're supposed to be able to form a union, because employers have virtually all of the power. They will intimidate those people who want to join a union. They will fire those people who are active in the process. And we've got to change that and give workers a fair shake if they want to join a union.
Yeah. So it's really vitally important that people call their senators, their United States senators, at 202-225-3121 and tell them to support the Employee Free Choice Act. We need to get a filibuster-proof and then ultimately a veto-proof majority in the United States Senate for this piece of legislation.
Absolutely right.
16 minutes past the hour. Brunch with Bernie.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
Now back to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Fire it up, fire it up. We push off, we are rolling boulders, crashing down the mirrored stairways to a life's best mountaineers. Fire it up.
Taking Back America, firing it up. Taking Back America here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program on Air America Radio. 21 minutes past the hour. By the way, Air Americans, head over to airamerica.com/Tom Hartman page and join the Tom Hartman blog and start blogging. That could put you in the running for our daily giveaway at the end of the show. David, our producer, is off today, so it'll be Louise, and she is going to, in her inimitable and totally whimsical fashion, pick the best comment of the day, in her opinion, or her favorite comment of the day, from the airamerica.com/Tom Hartman page, and that a serious comment, funny one, whatever, that person will receive an autographed copy of my newest book, Screwed, it's out in paperback now, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. So blog with us over at airamerica.com/Tom Hartman page. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us, taking your calls, 866-303-2227.
If I can at this point, let me also mention my website. It's sanders.senate.gov. We update it every day, and I think people might get a little bit of an insight of what's going on in Congress.
There you go, sanders.senate.gov. Thank you, Senator. Right. Thank you, Bernie. Sheila from Eugene, Oregon, you're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thank you. I'm concerned about the whole Blackwater issue. I look at this as a potential SS guard for Bush. And he's got, I understand there's training camps around the country. We don't know how many people there are. And if this could really be used to suppress any gatherings, shall we say, of people who are protesting against the government. And I see another, Kent State possibility there.
Well, Sheila, what I will tell you is you are going to see a very hard look at the contracting out that the federal government does and the privatization that the federal government does. One of the concerns that many of us have is that under Bush, there has been a major effort to privatize many, many jobs in America, lower wages for American workers, and in my view, lower the quality of the work performed. In terms of Blackwater, et cetera, what you're seeing, for example, in Iraq, and nobody knows, the information out there has been very, very unclear, but there are estimates that there are some 100,000 private individuals working in Iraq paid by the United States government, and what their responsibility is and what their legal responsibilities are about, we don't know. So you raise a very important issue that I think you're going to see a lot more looking at than you have in the past.
Ellen in Ludlow, Port Ludlow, Washington. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. I am the founder and co-director of VotersUnite.org. We've been studying and publishing information on election issues for 4 years. And recently, we have been studying the Senator Feinstein's Ballot Integrity Act, S-1487, and have some really serious concerns about the bill. With your strong position on against corporate control of the media and other privatization issues, it's very difficult for us to understand why you would be co-sponsoring this bill, since it removes federal elections from public oversight and gives the United States Election Assistance Commission control over federal elections and concedes so much power over elections to the voting system corporations?
Well, Ellen, others have raised that concern as well, and what I will do is take a hard look at that bill and see what's in it, and we'll take another look at it.
Thank you.
But let me just add this. I think there is a lot of concern in this country about how we vote and whether the votes are accurately counted. And I think through a lot of grassroots organizing, attention is now being paid. And in a number of states, Maryland, for example, as I understand it, there's a move now back to paper ballots. And there is, I think, a growing feeling that if these touchscreen voting machines, if we're not 100% sure that they're accurate, and we're not right now, that we may want to move away from them and go back to paper ballots. And that's something I'm not unsympathetic to.
Yeah, my take on this is that the largest frame is that if the government is here to protect the commons, and the most important part of the commons is the government, the way that we tell our government how to protect our commons is through our vote, then the vote is the last thing that should ever be privatized. And so allowing private corporations to tell us how we voted is a crime against democracy, I think. Mm-hmm. So. In personal opinion, anyhow. David in Columbus, Ohio, just about a minute before we got to take a break, David. You're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thanks. Just real quick, the senator responded to a question about impeachment last week, but I think he may have misheard the question. I think what people are asking now is, given that Congress is unwilling to pursue impeachment for anything that's already been done, is there anything this president could do going forward that would lead Democrats in Congress to demand impeachment proceedings? You know, for example, if you turn out the president had authorized the summary execution of an American citizen who had been secretly detained by the military, I mean, would that be enough?
Or if he started bombing Iran or something like that?
Well, the answer is, I don't want to speculate, but the answer, of course, impeachment is a tool that is always available, and if people feel that it's what he has done is applicable, then that action can be initiated. My point is that right now, everything being equal, there's no way in God's earth that one would have the votes to impeach the president or vice president, and that, in fact, it would be counterproductive from a political perspective.
Yeah, we need to move forward the agenda, and there's so many things that need to be done right now. 27 minutes past the hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us taking your calls, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, our Brunch with Bernie Hour on Air America Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Everybody's talking, no one says a word. Everybody's making love, no one really cares. There's Nazis in the bathroom, just below the stairs.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman Radio Program on Air America Radio. Our Brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders, taking your calls. Dave in Buffalo, and his website, by the way, sanders.senate.gov. And it's worth putting in your favorite places and checking out regularly because they update it on a real regular basis. Lots of great news over there at sanders.senate.gov. Dave in Buffalo, New York, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello, Tom. I love you and how you do it. Bernie,
thank you.
If Cheney, since 2004, doesn't believe he's a part of the current administration, how does he offer presidential privilege? And to you, Bernie, and anyone listening, peace.
Well, thank you, Dave. If this world needs anything right now, it needs peace, and certainly we're going to have to survive probably the worst vice president in the history of the United States. And I think one of the things that people will be seeing and are seeing right now is after 6 years of Bush and Cheney being able to do anything that they want with impunity, with no hearings, no investigations, you're seeing that being turned around right now. You're seeing it being turned around in the House through Henry Waxman's work, in the Senate through Patrick Leahy's work on the Judiciary Committee. So I think we're going to see a lot of revelations about an administration which, in my view, will go down in history, certainly, as the worst in the modern history of America, and maybe the worst in American history.
Susan in Kirkland, Washington, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Senator and Tom. I have one thing to conjunction with the fact that people are talking about how bad the president is and the vice president. One of my six-year-old twins was having the spooks the other night, and in the middle of our discussion of what was scaring her, she finally said to me, "Mama, when is George Bush going to stop being president?" And I asked her, I told her when, and she says, "Mama, I can't wait that long. He's too scary." You know, if a little one could figure that out, then, you know, I think a lot of people should wake up and realize. And my question for you, Senator, is there any chance of getting rid of this No Child Left Behind? I know it's supposed to come up for a reauthorization. And also, my question, I have another question for you on another topic, is you're talking about going back to paper ballots. And my concern is making it accessible to blind people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Susan, thank you very much. Brian?
No Child Left Behind is, in fact, coming up for reauthorization. I'm on the committee, Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committee, that deals with that. In my state of Vermont, there are a lot of concerns among teachers, parents, principals about that program. I'm going to take a very, very hard look at it. I voted against it when I was in the House, and I'm going to do everything I can to make very fundamental changes in No Child Left Behind, or else I personally will not be supportive of it. Sarah raises a good question that if you go to paper ballots, obviously we have to take care of the needs of people who are blind, but that's the case right now as well, and clearly that has got to be built into any legislation.
Sure, and that could be a place where you could have electronic voting machines that are owned by the government and that are programmed by the government rather than private corporations, that are available exclusively for people with various types of handicaps that need to use those machines. But it would be the exception to the rule. That my opinion. But anyhow, this is your opinion hour. So Sandra in Berkeley, California, you're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom, and hi, Mr. Sanders. It's good to talk to you. I want to know why it is, and I've been talking about this for a while with my best friend, and we want to know, why can't we protest against the media? And I call the media, I complain, I call my senators. What else can we do to complain against the media and say we should have a free press in this country? And one other thing, and then I'll just go off and listen, and that is, if Vice President Cheney is not part of the executive branch, can we just get rid of him then? Can we tell him goodbye?
Good question.
Sandra raises a good question, protesting against the media. And I think the way to do it is kind of pretty simple. I think if people feel that their local newspaper, for example, is biased, has on its op-ed section right-wing writers and not progressive writers, or that their editorial policy is not what the community feels is appropriate, what you have every right to do is to give the publisher a ring, the editor a ring, walk in with a group of people and say, look, we'd like to talk to you. We live in this community. We purchase your newspaper. We think it is not appropriate. And we'd like you to listen to what we have to say if you want our support. What the right wing has done effectively in some instances is organized boycotts, for example, and use the economic clout of a community. And I think the same thing with local radio stations. If you're living in a community where all you're getting is right-wing radio, then you have a right to walk in and say, look, you know, what about a balance on the station? Give us different points of view. So I think sometimes it can be very simple of just organizing a group of people and dropping in and talking to the local owner of the radio station or television station or newspaper and see what happens. If you don't get results, you can go on from there. But I think that's a good step forward.
Yeah. Another thing that you can do is if you can find progressive business people who are willing to advertise, if a station would pick up progressive talk radio, find the weakest station in the market and go talk to the market, to the station manager, along with some advertisers. That'll get the attention really fast.
I know in Brattleboro, Vermont, where this program is probably being broadcast right now,
It is.
Brattleboro is quite a progressive community. And some years ago, all that they received there on a local radio station was right-wing stuff. And a decision was made by the station owners, said, what am I doing here? This is a progressive community. Why am I giving them right-wing radio? And he flipped, and I think they've been doing well as a result.
Yeah, as have many. John in Gary, Indiana. John, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello?
Hey, John.
Hi.
Oh, wow. Hey, Senator. Hi, Tom. Yeah, love the show. A quick question. I'm 40 years old. I'm over-the-road truck driver. And I got 25 good years left of driving before I retire. And what's it going to take for this country to come up with a very simple health care plan, as I have none, before I retire? Because if not, I'm moving elsewhere. I'm already working on getting a passport done for me now. And that's my question. What's it going to take for this country?
John, thank you very much for that excellent question. And the question that you've just asked is on the minds of some 46 million Americans who have no health insurance, and even more who are underinsured, who understand that in America we are the only country in the industrialized world that does not guarantee health care to all people through a national health program, while at the same time we're spending twice as much as any other country on health care. And to answer your question, what does it take? It takes political organizing. It takes focus. It takes good legislation, which we are working on. Right now, clearly, the opposition is from the insurance companies who make billions of dollars administering, in many cases, inefficiently and poorly, health care in this country. It comes from the pharmaceutical industry, which is the most powerful lobby in Washington, D.C., having spent almost $1 billion in the last 10 years fighting hard to make sure that we pay by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. So to answer John's excellent question, what it takes is grassroots organizing. It takes focus. It takes telling members of the Senate and the House that our current health care system is disintegrating, that all Americans are entitled to health care as a right, and that, in fact, we can do that without spending any more money than the extraordinary amount of money we're spending right now. It's a huge issue. And, John, you're speaking for millions and millions of Americans, so thank you.
Yeah, well said. Jeff in North Hollywood, California, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes. Hello, gentlemen. Hi, Tom and Senator Sanders. I think that there's a natural divide in this country now, almost as big as the divide between the abortion issue. That's developing over Valerie Plame. And there's, you know, it's been proven through testimony that she was covert. And yet we have Fred Thompson and presidential candidates going around saying on television and in front of the public that she was not covert. Now, if you don't know the difference between treason and being a good American, then you don't deserve to be president of the United States. Why don't we jump on that as Democrats right away and expose these fools for their false impressions of a very important subject?
Well, I think you're right. I think you have seen a number of important hearings on just that issue. And you're going to see, I believe, more. And you're going to see more focus on the misdeeds, the illegal acts of Bush and Cheney. But when Jeff talks about a divide, let me tell you another divide that is far more significant than people's feelings about Valerie Plame. And that is the growing divide in this country between working people who are seeing a decline in their standard of living and the very wealthiest people in this country. And I think that as progressives, we will not do as well as we should if we lose focus on the terribly important economic issues that are impacting tens of millions of Americans. In the last 6 years alone, and I'm picking up on the question that John just asked from Indiana, 6 million more Americans have lost their health insurance, and the cost of health care is soaring. That's a divide. If you've got a lot of money in this country, you can have the best health care in the world. But if you're a working person, you may not have any health insurance at all, or you're paying much more than you can afford. That's a divide. It is a divide that working moms in this country can't find affordable child care for their kids. While if you have money, your kids are doing just fine. We have the highest rate of childhood poverty. That's a divide as well, and I think we've got to focus on some of those divides.
It's our national progressive town hall. Brunch with Bernie, Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov is website, answering your questions here on the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio, 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
This is your home for progressive talk, airamericaradio.com.
Sailing away on the crest of
It's the magic of democracy right here on the Tom Hartman Radio program on Air America Radio. Our national, our weekly national town hall. Senator Bernie Sanders, Brunch with Bernie, our program, sanders.senate.gov, the website. Bernie Sanders, the founder of the Progressive Caucus in the House and now in the United States Senate, the independent from Vermont. John in New York City, you are live with Bernie Sanders.
Hey, how you
John?
Doing, Zach? Yeah, I'm here. How are you?
You're on the air. Great, great.
Basically, I wanted to answer John, the other driver's question. I'm a truck driver. I drive a cement truck. And the way we're going to get health care is by basically providing it for ourselves. Right now, we have to keep on top of trends and technologies that are going on to open up new economics for ourselves with free trade as being an entrepreneur in this world. Basically, I own a commercial driver training school that I opened up for people to get free information. But at the same time, now I'm starting to rent it out to real commercial driver schools. And basically, I show the inside of the truck what all the switches do and everything like that so people could see it before they even get in the truck. So it's just basically about evolution and going with the technology before the gap widens too much.
Well, John, I applaud your hard work and your efforts, but I don't quite agree with you. I myself believe that health care is a right that the United States should join the rest of the industrialized world and pass a national health care program guaranteeing health care to all people. And what that will mean is not just take the tremendous stress off the backs of people all over this country. You know what? It's going to be good for the economy as well, because there are many companies who are paying far more than they can afford for health care. They will be more competitive if we had a national health care program.
Robert in Sarasota, Florida. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, hi, Bernie. I want to tell you how much I respect the work that you're doing. My question is, how do we expose the hypocrisy of this administration when they talk about the sanctity of life and vote against the stem cell research when they sacrifice lives of young men and young women in Iraq and all of the Iraqi citizens, the populace that are being destroyed? How do we?
Well, Robert, thank you very much for that question. Yeah, I don't know how one can talk about the so-called sanctity of life when it's not just 3,500 Americans who have been killed in that war, but estimates are hundreds of thousands of Iraqis. And his veto of stem cell research will slow down research, which will save lives and make end suffering in so many terrible diseases that our people are facing. So you're absolutely right. I think the American people, frankly, Robert, have caught on to how bad a president and how reactionary a president George W. Bush is. But my view is that if we're going to move this country forward in a progressive direction, we need to go back to old-fashioned ways, and that is door-knocking, education, organizing, talking to people who may not agree with us on every single issue. Go outside of your own cadre of friends. Talk to people who may disagree with you here or there. But the goal is to bring working people into the progressive movement, get low-income people activated in the political process. And when we do those things, we can transform America. We can have a national health care program. Instead of giving tax breaks to billionaires and spending the war in Iraq, we can make sure that every person in this country can get a college education if they have that desire without going deeply into debt. We can build affordable housing. We can break our dependency on oil and move to sustainable energy and create millions of jobs. We can do incredible things in this country if we organize and take on the big money interests who are much more concerned about making the wealthiest people in this country richer than worried about the needs of the middle class. So we got a lot of work in front of us, but it has to do with education and it has to do with organizing.
Hazel in Bluebell, Pennsylvania. You're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, how are you today?
Great. Good.
As an African-American woman, I'm just confused. Why is it that the news media or Congress doesn't care that the Republican Party is caging African-American soldiers and no one seems to care? Like, is the FBI going to step in and investigate this, or are they just going to just sweep this under the rug? I'm just amazed.
Well, Hazel, I mean, all that I can say is that after 6 years in which the Bush-Cheney administration have gotten away doing anything they wanted to do without any oversight, without any investigations. When I was in the House, I was on the Government Reform Committee, which supposedly does hearings on important issues. They did nothing in terms of looking at what Bush Cheney were doing. You are beginning to see them. Henry Waxman seems to be holding a hearing a day. But the issue that you raised about caging, very important issue. You will see hearings, discussion, and activity on that issue.
Skip in Seattle, Washington. You're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Senator and Tom, thank you for both of you for your service to our country. I'm a service-connected spinal cord injured veteran here in Seattle, and I'm really concerned following the May 14th report by the Joint Committee on Hospital Accreditation that the Seattle VA had a preliminary denial of accreditation for threats to life. There was a suicide here by an Iraqi veteran in February on the psych ward, and it caused almost $1 million worth of environmental changes to that facility. And we're estimating that if that's the case around the country, Senator, that may be in excess of $160 million that the VA will have to renovate their psych wards for all their hospitals to maintain their accreditation and their affiliations with our universities and with the rest of our medical community. But I'm concerned on June 27th when you mark up the VA's legislation that this issue doesn't go by like it did when the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee nominated Dr. Cussman and confirmed his nomination, that this wasn't brought up. This is unprecedented, and it really sends a signal throughout the VA and throughout the veteran community, 6 million of us who get health care there, and the 26 million of us that think they're eligible to get health care there.
Okay, Skip, let me just jump. First of all, thank you very much for your service to our country. I'm on the Veterans Committee. You're going to see more action and more funding for the VA in the next few months than you have for the last many, many years. And we are not going to forget about people who put their lives on the line, people who have been injured, PTSD, traumatic brain injury. We're going to move so that every veteran in this country can have access to health care. You're going to see some good changes there.
Good on you, Bernie. Sanders.Senate.gov.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Hartman Program on Air America Radio, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
We're going to try something new here on the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back to the second hour of our program. We're going to do an on-air straw poll, a presidential straw poll among the Democratic presidential candidates. And for that matter, I suppose you could vote even for a Republican presidential candidate. And what I'm going to do in a few minutes, and it's going to be about 10 minutes from now, is we'll start doing this, is instead of normally Lauren answers the phone and says, you know, what's your name, where are you calling from, and give us your topic in a sentence so that, you know, we have, you know, some sense of what's going on and put people on the air. She's not even going to answer the phone. It's just going to ring and ring and ring when you call, and I will put you on the air and ask you, and the question will be, who would you vote for if the primary were held today? And you have basically one sentence. And so you can say who and why if it's really, really short. Now, you run more than 10 seconds or so, I'm just going to pop right to the next person. And we're just going to try and get as many people as possible in here. And Louise is going to keep track, and we're going to do our straw poll. First, I want to play some audio clips from the Take Back America conference that I was very pleased to broadcast from Monday and Tuesday, the largest conference collection of progressives in the country, anyway. And here's Barack Obama, and we've got a bunch of audio clips here, so let me just give you some of the presidential candidates. Barack Obama, first of all.
While we're at it, why don't we close Guantanamo and restore the right of habeas corpus? Because that's how we lead. Not with the might of our military, but the power of our ideals and the power of our values. It's time to show the world we're not a country that ships prisoners in the dead of night to be tortured in far-off countries. We're not a country that runs prisons, which locks people away without ever telling them why they're there or why what they're charged with. We're not a country which preaches compassion to others while we allow bodies to float down the streets of major American cities. That's not who we are. We're America. We're a nation that liberated a continent from a madman, that lifted ourselves from the depths of depression, that won civil rights and women's rights and voting rights for all our people. We're the beacon that has led generations of weary travelers to find opportunity and liberty and hope on our doorstep. That's who we are.
That's Barack Obama from the Take Back America conference. Here's John Edwards from the Take Back America conference.
Instead of taking billions of dollars out of the budget for kids to be able to go to college, which is what this president has done, suppose instead that we had something called College for Everyone. Here's the idea, very simple. If a kid graduates from high school and they're qualified to go to college and they commit to work at least 10 hours a week when they're there, we cover their tuition and books. Very simple.
That's one of the two John Edwards clips we have here. Here's Bill Richardson from the Take Back America conference.
Our obligation is twofold. One, to preserve America's security interests in the region. And secondly, I do believe we have an obligation to leave the Iraqi people with a security and a government structure that can be preserved. Now, what I've outlined is I would withdraw our troops, no residual forces, but I would use the leverage of that withdrawal to bring what you mentioned. One is a reconciliation conference of the three groups in Iraq, the Sunni, the Shia, and the Kurds. They would divide oil revenue. They would have an Iraqi federal government. They would divide cabinet ministries and possibly three separate entities, all in a coalition government. I would also, for security, bring an all-Muslim peacekeeping force, Turkey, Jordan. I would invite Iran and Syria to help enforce the peace. And I believe the motivating factor for all countries in the region is that there not be an outright sectarian conflict, civil war. Nobody wants refugees streaming in and out.
So there's Bill Richardson at the Take Back America conference. Here is Hillary Clinton at the Take Back America conference.
We've seen government scientists silenced, information taken off of government websites. We've seen retaliation against those in the government who stood up to this administration. We all watched, stunned and heartsick, as a natural disaster was turned into a national disgrace along our Gulf Coast after Katrina. We saw families stranded while their government paid no attention to them and was late in coming to help. We had to give a special DVD to the president to pay attention while bodies were floating down the streets of New Orleans. And we know that the war in Iraq has been catastrophic for our country and for our position in the world. It has taken a human toll beyond measure, and it is honestly hard to believe that one of these things could happen in America, but all of them have. It is a stunning record of secrecy and corruption, of cronyism run amok.
There you go, Hillary Clinton at the Take Back America conference. Here's one more clip of Barack Obama. These are all, by the way, courtesy of Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com.
We are 16 votes away in the Senate from ending this war, a comparable number in the House. We need to keep turning up the pressure on all those Republican congressmen and senators who refuse to acknowledge the reality that the American people know so well. We will call them. We will knock on their doors. We will bring our troops home. It is time to bring this war to a close. It is time to recognize there's no military solution to the problems in Iraq. It is time to turn the page. And when we do that, we can stand before the world and remind them that America is still the last best hope on earth. This president may occupy the White House, but for the last 6 years, the position of leader of the free world has remained open, unfilled. It's time to fill that role once more.
Barack Obama at the Take Back America conference. Here's Dennis Kucinich at the Take Back America conference.
I see peace as being the central issue and concern of our time. I see all of the issues that we're speaking about connected to peace, with peace at the center, and in a Kucinich administration, we would begin with an understanding of the centrality of peace to life in the United States and to life on our planet. We would begin We would begin with policies which reject war as an instrument of policy.
Dennis Kucinich at the Take Back America Conference, and finally, John Edwards.
America cannot be a leader through raw power. America has to demonstrate that we are worthy of leadership, that it is the right thing for the rest of the world to follow American leadership. That will never happen unless the world sees America as the light again, that we're the source of hope, that everyone wants to be like the United States of America.
Okay, now to our straw poll. Please, no more than 10 seconds. Who you would vote for, and one sentence or less, why? Our number, 866-303-2270. You're on the air.
I'd vote for Dennis Kucinich.
Because?
I think he's the brightest of them all, and he fits my beliefs.
Great. Thank you very much. You're next. You're on the air. You can hear a click, and you can hear a change in the quality of yours. That person just hung up. Okay, you're on the air now.
I'd like to vote for Kucinich, without question.
Okay, great. And next, you're on the air.
Good morning, Tom. Dennis Kucinich is is closest to my views, but among the reasonable candidates, I would definitely vote for John Edwards. I think he gets it. Hillary and Obama are corporatists, and I don't think America can handle
it. Okay, so John Edwards is your vote. Got it. Next, who would you vote for?
John Edwards, because he's leading that parade you're talking about.
There you go. Okay, thank you, and thanks for being brief. Next, you're on the air. Who would you vote for?
Dennis Kucinich. He is reasonable. Thank you.
Okay, great. Very well said. Thank you. 1-866-303-2270. You're on the air. Who would you vote for?
I would vote for Barack Obama.
John Edwards.
Okay. And you want to just in one sentence say why?
Yes, because based on polls I've seen, he's the one Democrat who can beat the potential Republican candidates, and he's the one who can turn the page, bring the world together and the country together again.
Great. Thank you very much. Next, you're on the air. Who would you vote for?
Yes, I would vote for Mike Gravel, and the reason that I would vote for him is because he is the only one who is talking about empowering the people via the national initiative, and I feel that that's the only way that we're going to see any kind of significant changes in our policies.
Yeah, and he's pushing that hard, and he's doing a great job with it, and I'm sorry we don't have audio for him. There was none there on that website. Next, you're on the air. Who would you vote for?
I would vote for Barack Obama. I am an Illinoisan, and I want to vote for my favorite son. Thank you very much.
Great. You're welcome. Thanks so much for the call. We'll continue this on-air straw poll. Just give us a call at 866-303-2270. You'll just hear it ring and ring and ring until I toss you on the air, and then you'll have 10 seconds to tell us who you're going to vote for. We'll continue that through the next segment, which will be another 10 minutes or so, and then at the bottom of the hour, we'll go back to our Anything Goes, and we'll just take your calls and talk about any topic you want. 16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocky was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes.
It's our Anything Goes Friday, and we're doing our progressive straw poll. Who would you vote for if the election was today? Somebody in the chat room said Higgins Hartman. I'm telling you, I'm sorry, my cat is not nonviolent. I would not want him as president. Anyhow, you will hear, when you dial 1-866-303-2270, you will hear the phone ring and ring and ring and ring and ring until I pop you on the air. When it stops ringing, you are on the air. Please give us the name of the candidate you would vote for if the election were held today, the primary were held today, and at the most, one sentence, no more than 10 seconds, about why. You're on the air. Oh, sorry. Now you're on the air.
Hi, I would vote for Barack Obama unless Al Gore gets in the race.
Okay, great. Thank you. And next, you're on the air. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. Who would you vote for?
Dennis Kucinich.
Okay.
He's matches my views right down to the bottom.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for the call. Who would you vote for? You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd vote for John Edwards. I think he shows that he has the most concern and proven he has the most concern for all Americans.
Great. Thank you very much. Who would you vote for? You're on the air.
Three votes in my house for Kucinich. World peace, single-payer health care, universal human rights.
So great. Thank you very much. You're on the air. Who would you vote for?
I would vote
for Mr. Bill Richards. He's the only one that's got the most experience with foreign policy. He's the smartest guy there. We need to smooth over our relationship with the world, and we need to do it soon.
And thank you very much. Thank you very much, Bill Richardson. You're on the air. Who would you vote for?
Dennis Kucinich. I really believe in him. I think he's the man. Thank you.
Great. He's getting a lot of votes here, and you're on the air. Who would you vote for? Maybe, hopefully nobody's organizing a campaign. Who would you vote for?
Bill Richardson, because he's qualified, he has foreign policy experience, and he's not a phony like Hillary.
Okay, great. You're on the air. Who would you vote for if the primary were held today? Okay, great. Next, you're on the air. Who would you vote for if the election were held today, if the primary were today?
I'd vote for Hillary because she's the only one I think could actually get things I like through Congress, although I prefer Obama Kucinich, but they wouldn't. They'd be like Carter, that Congress wouldn't work with them.
Okay, a vote for Hillary. Thank you very much. You're on the air. Who would you vote for if the election were today?
Edwards. He's electable.
Great. Great. Thank you very much. You're on the air. Who would you vote for if the election was today?
John Edwards. I think he has the best chance of beating the Republicans.
Great. Next, you're on the air. Who would you vote for if the election was today?
Dennis Kucinich, because peace is his main goal. And my husband sitting right next to me would vote for Edwards because he's more electable, he thinks.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Now, you're on the air. Who would you vote for?
Edwards.
Edwards. Great. Thank you very much. You're on the air. Who would you vote for?
Kucinich.
Yes? Kucinich. Okay, great. One. Louise says only one vote per call. You're on the air. Who would you vote for?
I'd vote for Dennis Kucinich if he can get the support. Otherwise, John Edwards.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Next, you're on the air. Who would you vote for?
I'd vote for John Edwards, although I'd be happy to vote for any of the other candidates, including Al Gore.
Great. Next, you're on the air. Who would you vote for?
I'd vote for John Edwards because I think he gets it for the middle class.
Great. Thank you very much. Next, you're on the air. Who would you vote for if the election were today?
It would be Kucinich with Obama on the ticket. They are the most sincere, and they will get the most done.
Yeah, it would be quite a ticket. Thank you very much. You're on the air. Who would you vote for if the election were today?
Dennis Kucinich. He's the only true progressive in the mix.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. You're on the air. Who would you vote for today?
Anybody but Hillary. That's the one and only thing I have in common with the Republicans.
Okay. I'm not sure that counts as a vote, but I got the sentiment. Next, you're on the air. Who would you vote for?
Yes, any Republican, because I'm tired of living and I want the world to end.
Okay, another non-vote, but an interesting comment. You're on the air. Who would you vote for today?
Yes, sir. I'm a little different. They're all the same. The only true one for the Constitution is Ron Paul. Thank you.
Okay, a vote for Ron Paul. And as I said, it can be a Republican as well. You're on the air. Who would you vote for today?
I'd be writing in Gore.
You'd be writing in Gore.
Writing in Gore.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. You're on the air. Who would you vote for if the election were today?
I vote for Kucinich because, having worked in our healthcare system, I know that health insurance is not the answer. Healthcare is.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. If the election were today, who would you vote for? You're on the air.
Hi, I'm from New York. I'd vote for John Edwards. He has a progressive vision to restore populism in this country, restore America's reputation, and he's got the developed policies to do what he says, and he can win.
Great. Thank you very much. You're on the air. Who would you vote for today?
John Edwards. He's shows leadership. He's not afraid to speak out, and he's electable.
Great. In our progressive straw poll here on the Tom Hartman program, who would you vote for if the election were held today? You're on the air.
I would vote for Barack Obama unless Al Gore gets in, and the Gore-Obama ticket would be killer.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to comment on these things right now. You're on the air. Who would you vote for today?
John Edwards, if Al Gore is not available.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. You're on the air. Who would you vote for today?
Hi, John Edwards. Visionary, ideas, electable, charismatic.
Great, thanks. You're on the air. Who would you vote for if the election were today?
I'd vote for Dennis Kucinich. He's got the very best idea of what to do for this country.
Great. Thank you very much. You're on the air. Who would you vote for today?
I would vote for Dennis Kucinich unless Al Gore gets into the race.
Great. Okay, we've got a collection. I'll give you the score right after the break, and then we'll take your calls on any topic you want. We'll go back to normal calls. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-
We're dealing dreams of democracy, of America, a country that stands tall and the rest of the world says, yeah, we want to be like them. Once again, so much harm has been done to this country by the Republican Party and the conservatives since 1981. From Iran-Contra all the way up to the war in Iraq, it has just been a nonstop disaster. And it is so time for a change. The winner of our progressive, our absolutely totally non-scientific, first ever on-air progressive straw poll. And we will do this again. In fact, I think we should do it periodically all the way up to the primary. I thought it was great fun. And we're not going to do it anymore today, but we'll revisit this probably in all probability next week. The winner was Dennis Kucinich with 15 votes. John Edwards was second with 13 votes. Barack Obama was third with 4 votes. Bill Richardson was fourth with 2 votes. And then Ron Paul, Hillary Clinton, Al Gore, and Mike Gravel had 1 vote each. So that's our totally unscientific, but it's kind of cool. In the meantime, there is something happening that I think you really need to know about. They're blogging about it over at the Center for American Progress's blog, thinkprogress.org. Last month, the House Armed Services Committee dealt a blow to the human rights community by failing to include a provision restoring habeas corpus in the 2008 Defense Authorization Bill. At the time, Nancy Pelosi said that they were going to address it in a standalone bill. Well, they've done it. And House Chairman today, the House Chairman Ike Skelton, the Democrat from Mississippi, of the Armed Services Committee. Now, you don't hear Ike Skelton's name a whole lot, but Ike Skelton and John Conyers are our jolly good fellows for the day. Congratulations, Ike Skelton and John Conyers. These guys have introduced legislation that will finally restore habeas corpus rights, you know, right across the board, including to U.S. detainees being imprisoned indefinitely without trial. The Senate Judiciary Committee has passed habeas corpus legislation earlier this month. In a statement, Skelton said the legislation takes aim at the seriously flawed provision of the Military Commissions Act that stripped people of their habeas rights. He said, quote, habeas corpus is one of the fundamental touchstones of our constitutional democracy. Habeas corpus, of course, meaning the right to have due process, the right to if you're thrown in jail, the right to challenge your detention. Habeas corpus is one of the fundamental touchstones of our constitutional democracy. He says, we cannot preach freedom abroad if we are not willing to give prisoners the ability to establish their innocence. And we cannot advance the cause of fighting terrorism at home if our government takes constitutionally dubious shortcuts. Well said. God bless you. And this is one of those times. It's so important to catch people doing things right. You know, so often we call our members of Congress and we call our members of the House or Senate and say, but you shouldn't have voted on that bankruptcy bill, or how dare you vote for that, you know, or whatever it is. It's equally important. In fact, I would argue it's even more important to call these guys when, and I use that word in the gender neutral term. The way I grew up in Michigan, it was a gender-neutral word. But in any case, call these men and women in Congress and tell them, good on you. I just wanted to call and thank you for that. And you can call Ike Skelton, Congressman Ike Skelton and Congressman John Conyers in Congress. The number is 202-225-3121. And just give them a shout-out and say, hey, you know, thank you for working to restore habeas corpus. It's marvelous what you're doing. And I'm guessing, particularly if Ike Skelton gets a lot of calls from people, because he's not in the news all that much these days, that it'll be a good and pleasant thing for them. And our representatives need to know that we are attending to what they're doing. We are paying attention. We do care. And we actually do think well of them when they do the right thing. So Ike Skelton, the Democrat from Mississippi, and John Conyers, the Democrat from Michigan, their telephone number, the number for any member of Congress, for that matter, area code 202-225-3121. Our number 866-303-2270. And Tehran in Seattle, Washington. Am I pronouncing that right?
Hi, I'm sorry?
Did I say your name? Is your name Tehran?
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry. Good morning.
Great. You're on the air.
I enjoyed the straw poll. That was fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
I think you got all the Kucinich supporters listening to your show today.
I think so. That's why I said I wonder if somebody's organized a campaign or if it's just, you know, it'll be interesting week to week to you know, see how this thing goes. We're going to do it again. Anyway, that's not what you called about, is it?
But it's not. I'm just concerned about what I'm hearing from all the candidates on both sides, and, you know, just how it doesn't really vibe with what the problems I'm seeing, particularly in the Middle East. And I just really think, you know, it seems as though you have to be a Zionist in order to get elected in this country. And I really think that's a problem in terms of our relationship with the Middle East, in that, you know, this the support of occupation of Palestine, and how that just really gets covered over, you know, in terms of either you're a Zionist or you're,
you know, I rather than using the word Zionist that has different meanings to different people and very often is thrown out as a pejorative, I would say that what let me rephrase what I think you're saying, and that is that if in the United States, if you don't agree with the right wing conservative elements within Israel, then you get attacked. And because the fact of the matter is, and this is the conversation Jimmy Carter and I had on this program a few months ago, there is a broad spectrum of opinion within Israel, among Israelis, about what should be done and how it should be done with regard to everything from the occupied territories to other aspects of domestic and foreign policy. And by and large, that broad spectrum of thought and debate that is happening in Israel, in the Israeli press, right out in the open, every single day, and it is vigorous, is not happening in the United States. And so to that extent, I think, you know, yeah, I don't disagree that there needs to be more discussion of this, particularly by our candidates. Mark in Fallbrook, California. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Well, I'm a little concerned that John Edwards isn't doing better in the general election polls. I truly believe that if Bloomberg gets into the election, either Obama or Clinton will not win, and another Republican would just be catastrophic. I think Edwards stands a real good chance of saying something that was sound with the majority of the people.
Yeah, I'm concerned about a Bloomberg candidacy. The thing is, he's going to have to find a running mate, and it looks like it's going to be Chuck Hagel. And Chuck Hagel has identified himself as an anti-war Republican. And it'll be interesting to see if Chuck Hagel's former being the president of what is now ES&S, the Electronic Voting Machine Company, you know, is perceived as a negative, if that has anything to do with it. But I was very interested to read Mark Green's op-ed over on Huffington Post the other day, where he was saying that he thinks that for every two Republican votes that Bloomberg takes, he'll take three Democratic votes. And that's a tough one. It's a tough one. Third-party candidates. I mean, going all the way back to Teddy Roosevelt, who, you know, was president as a Republican, but then ran as a third-party candidate and arguably got the most votes, I think, of anybody in the last 100 years or so. And Ross Perot, 19% of the vote, although no electoral votes. Third-party candidates have a long history in this country of modifying the outcomes of elections, typically in ways that don't agree with them. You know, and that's the fundamental problem that we have with the two-party system and without having instant runoff voting. And the solution, in my mind, is IRV, instant runoff voting. But we don't have that at a national level. It is growing. It's being promoted most aggressively by the Green Party, which is why I think it's important at the local level to support the Green Party, particularly with regard to their work on our IRV, and to start pushing the Democratic Party to become supporters of instant runoff voting. I know that they think that they will lose power as a result of it. Frankly, I think what's going to happen is that democracy in America will become reinvigorated as a result of instant runoff voting, so we can have then multiple parties on the tickets and not have the result of a third-party candidate throwing the election. So, like the last year we lived in Vermont, we had Anthony Polina, a friend of mine, a great guy, a progressive candidate. He ran on the progressive ticket, the Progressive Party in Vermont. And he and the Democrat, I forget who was running as Democrat, as the Democratic candidate for governor, between the two of them, they had well over 50% of the vote. Because Anthony, as I recall, pulled almost 25% of the vote. And the Democrat pulled 30-some-odd percent of the vote. But they ended up, you know, just barely 30%, but they ended up with a Republican governor in Vermont because the Republican pulled like 31 or 32% or whatever it was. So here you have, and you know, that's the tragedy of third-party candidacies. And whether it's Bloomberg or now we've got talk about Nader getting into the race. And I don't think that's going to go anywhere. I mean, I think even if Nader gets into the race, just like in the last race, he'll be largely ignored. But nonetheless, it's a problem. Robert in San Mateo. Hey, Robert. Got about a minute before we got to take a break. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Well, what's up is this. The 9/11 Truth Alliance has some division. That's to be expected. Jim Feltzer has a PhD in philosophy, and he believes high-tech weapons were used to control demolition of the towers. But Stephen Jones, who has a doctorate in physics, believes that there's plenty of evidence that conventional means were used. It was a unique controlled demolition, explosive implosion. But I talked to We Are Change, Jason Burmess and Dylan, over there in, the loose change people, and they said they're willing to talk at any time.
We're putting together a show on this, Robert. We're working on it. Our big challenge up to this point.
David Ray Griffin, I'd like to get in on that.
Yeah, David is good, and he's been on this program three times, maybe four times over the last few years, and Alex Jones has been on this program as well. But we're going to put together a program and in depth and get folks. We're trying to get a couple of the skeptics on as well. It highlights issues better to have both sides presented. Frankly, I think it makes for a better discussion. It's just hang on. It's going to take us a week or two to put the thing together and do it right. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
You're listening to the nation's progressive talk, AirAmericaRadio.com.
It's our Anything Goes Friday, and we're going to be back to your calls on any topic you'd like. Right up to the top of the hour. Right now, though, for just a quick moment, let me first of all correct myself. Ike Skelton is from Missouri, not Mississippi, and my apologies. And Ellen Ratner's on the line with us from the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. And Ellen, we did a straw poll with audio clips off talkradionews.com, the clips of the various presidential candidates, the Democratic presidential candidates. And I thought you'd be interested in this. First of all, hi.
Hi.
Great to have you with us. We just had people call in and vote on the air, just bang, 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 like that. And over about a 15-minute period, this is just a quick snapshot. 15 votes for Kucinich, 13 for Edwards, 4 for Obama, 2 for Richardson, and Hillary, Gravel, Gore, and Ron Paul each got 1. So that's our straw poll.
Oh, wow.
Interesting.
Your numbers are different than most.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting. We're going to do it week after week and see how it comes out. General Odierno has offering some interesting insights, I understand. You had a recent conversation with him?
Well, I didn't, but he actually did a live video cast from the Pentagon. And, of course, I wasn't at the Pentagon, but our Pentagon, we have a booth at the Pentagon, and our reporters were there. And basically, he said if everything goes the way it's going now, there's a potential by the spring we'll be able to reduce forces and Iraq security forces could take over. It could happen sooner than that, he said. I don't know. He then said there's so many things that could happen between now and then. He also said that he asked basically for calm and restraint. He said that actually Maliki had asked for that. And he said that we're beyond a surge of forces. We're now in a surge of operations. We will do this with our full capacities. And my view of this is that essentially they are getting ready knowing there is no way the Republicans can win the 08 election if they're still in Iraq the way they're in now. And so they are, you know, feathering that bed, so to speak.
Well, this is where I think that the Democratic consultants have their heads in places where they shouldn't be. I had one of them on this program from the Take Back America conference, And, you know, he said, I said, what's the advice you're giving Democratic candidates? And he said, hammer the Republicans on Iraq. And I said, I don't think Iraq's going to be an issue in the 08 election because I think the Republicans are going to pull down our force levels, our troop levels, to the point where they can essentially, you know, declare victory and come home kind of thing, or at least get it to the point where the conflict level is so low, that it's like Afghanistan, that it's just not on the radar screen of most Americans. And you guys better have a plan B. And he said, no, that's not going to happen. And I said, you got no plan B?
No,
and he's like, no, we got no plan B.
The problem is they don't have a plan B. And, of course, what's going to happen is Bloomberg is going to come in with plan A, B, C, and D. And and the Democrats are going to look pretty weird.
Yeah, and pretty weak. And the consequence of that is that we'll have another Republican president. And I'm wondering if Bloomberg gets into the race, you know, I know you have some familiarity with him. You know, being from New York I don't know the extent of your relationship there, but what do you think his platform would be?
It's very hard to say, but he's going to go clear on education. He is going to go, very much on environment. He's going to be, pro-business, but also pro-security, and he's going to be socially liberal. And it's very hard to know how that is going to formulate, but he's got guys all over the country right now sort of checking things out and seeing, where he may be able to nudge in there. And it'll be, I'll tell you, one thing I will say about the 08 race, you and I will probably never live in our lifetimes in such an interesting time for a race because there are no rules anymore, and everything that we've known about has been thrown out of these third-party candidacies because of a woman running, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's anything goes 08, I guess. Yeah, well, because, the Internet, there's just so much that's changed. If Bloomberg, you know, it's interesting, Ross Perot was the last third-party candidate in our lifetime, yours and mine, to really gather a lot of votes. I mean, he pulled, what, 19% of the vote, as I recall?
19% of the vote.
Yeah, and you know, which is not at all insignificant. That's a big chunk of the electorate.
No, he did not win any electoral votes. But again, all Bloomberg has to do is win 35% in some states.
Right, exactly. And this is my point. When Perot ran as a third party candidate, he was basically a single issue third party candidate, and it was anti-NAFTA, anti-WTO, anti-so-called free trade. And, of course, history has proven him right, but both Clinton and Bush Sr. were on the other side of that issue, and that was really his issue, was economic populism and protectionism, you know, for lack of a better word. And I'm wondering, without a signature issue, won't Bloomberg's candidacy simply be seen as a vanity candidacy?
Well, yes, except Bloomberg has an ego like every other politician in this country, but he's also not a stupid egomaniac. He's a very smart one, and he is not going to run in this race unless the numbers show that he really can win. Not a chance. So he's going to do his homework before he runs. Oh, he would never. Bloomberg is a very smart businessman. He's not going to throw away his money and his power for that.
So there's not a chance that he would run if the probabilities are that he would merely be a spoiler.
I don't see it. If Nader comes in again, which he's thinking of doing, it's just unbelievable that he would even.
I know. I don't think Nader's going to be any kind of factor at all. He'll pull 0.1%.
I agree with you. He'll make Dennis Kucinich look like a big winner.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think Ralph Nader, you know, he's a good guy and I like him. I didn't vote for him last time. I did vote for him in 2000 and I'm still apologizing for it. But Bloomberg, that's interesting. So, well, we'll have to, like you said, we live in very interesting times. We'll have to keep an eye on this. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thanks, Ellen.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. And a great Friday to you. And hope all is well. It's our Anything Goes Friday. We'll be back with your calls and the news of the day right after the news at the top of the hour. Stick around.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program, Viagra for your brain. This is Air America Radio.
Welcome back to the third hour of our program, 6 minutes past the hour. Randy Rhoads back in 2005. In all probability, the most listened to radio talk show host in all of the United States, Randy Rhoads, spoke before John Conyers in his forum about solutions that could be offered. Joe Madison, David Brock, Al Franken, and she all testified 2 years ago about the state of talk radio. The Center for American Progress has now issued a study essentially making the same points. And it's, I think it's a really interesting time now in our country, and an interesting time that we have this start having some conversations about the media and where we're going with the media. Anyhow, we'll get into that in some more detail as the time goes on. Right now, it's Anything Goes Friday. Anything you'd like to talk about, any topics, political or not. And Randy, in New York City, you are on the air.
Hello.
Hey, Randy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I read one of your ADD books, which proposed the hunter versus farmer theory, and it resonated so strongly with me because I had thought that my issues might be more like not being able to, Native American societies and different societies across the world don't treat time the same way. And I thought maybe there's something going on in my brain where I don't prioritize, because if you have all the time in the world to do things, that works. And as I was doing research, I've come across all these books and articles. I was also diagnosed young as profoundly gifted, which I'd forgotten about until recently. And you co-wrote a book on, I think it was called The Edison Trait.
The Edison Gene. I didn't co-write it. I wrote it.
Oh, there we go. My mistake. Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
And I'm wondering to what degree a certain percentage, maybe even a huge percentage, of what is being called ADD is simply giftedness and not fitting in, and what your thoughts are on the concept of twice exceptional versus just one or the other.
There's a chapter about this in another book I wrote called Beyond ADD. As you know, a fellow kid who was diagnosed as being gifted at a young age and probably would have been diagnosed as being ADD if I hadn't had an alternative school setting available to me as a result of Sputnik back in the 50s. I think that there are a lot of kids who are gifted who are being diagnosed as ADHD or as behavior problems simply because they're just bored silly. I mean, just absolutely bored silly. And medicating them is an easy way to deal with them, and it satisfies the teachers. And I think it's a tragic thing. I think that in fact, the total federal budget, the total federal education budget for in terms of special education, remedial education, just the education in general for gifted kids is 0.01% of the total federal budget, 0.01%. And, you know, this is just like a horrible mistake, in my opinion. I'm not suggesting that kids with learning disabilities should have money taken away from those budgets, but, you know, any business that looked at its most productive division, its division, its product, its whatever, its division that had the greatest potential and said, we're going to allocate the fewest resources to that division, would be considered crazy. And again, I'm not suggesting schools should be run as businesses, but I think the metaphor is apt. And Randy, I agree with you. I think, in my opinion, there are a lot of misdiagnoses of attention deficit disorder and attention deficit hyperactive disorder. And one of the more common ones are among gifted kids. Bernard in Columbia, South Carolina. Hey, Bernard, what's up?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was distracted for a moment.
Good one.
Peace and blessings be upon you and all the listening bodies. I have bad news for you. Primary season will not choose the nominee for the Democratic Party or for the Republican Party. It shall merely cut down the field of contestants to, say, 5 or 6 on each side. Beware, fellow Democrats. The decision will be made in smoke-filled back rooms at the convention itself, and the superdelegates, party officials and elected Democratic office holders who are technically uncommitted, will be the swing vote. And some of those smoke-filled rooms, it won't be tobacco.
Yeah, well, That might help, actually. Bernard, we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. But frankly, I suspect that's not the case because we're having all these early primaries, and I think there's going to be so many votes in from you and me, you know, from we the people, that it's going to be pretty clear who's what and where and why and how and everything else. Rick in Pasadena, California. Rick, you're on the air.
Hello. Yes, hi. Well, I originally called to try to vote in the straw poll, but I called too late. But my vote was for Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. And, I believe she's the she's very intelligent and also very tough, and I don't believe that she's going to allow the Republicans to switch voter the way they did to John Kerry. Although I believe that Bill Richards is probably the most qualified, and a lot of the candidates are really good, but I think she'll probably be the best choice to beat the Republicans.
Yeah, the good news on our side, Rick, is that we have an embarrassment of riches. There's not a single candidate on the Democratic side running for president right now who I wouldn't vote for president. And I suspect that perhaps even a majority of Republicans can't say that about the Republican primary candidates. That's why Fred Thompson's getting so much juice, even though nobody knows who he is. Nobody realizes that Fred Thompson's main claim to fame is that for 20 years he was a lobbyist. So anyhow, Phil in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Hey, Phil.
Hey, good morning. I'm sorry. Good afternoon, Tom. I think that we have an expression here in the South called if you want to break a dog or label or brand a dog as a bad dog, you hang two rotten pork chops around their neck and everybody stays away from them. And what I think we need to do is hang that brand of warmongering, and most importantly, that the Republican Party will never support a national health care policy. I think that's something you can count on as a party platform, that they will stay in Iraq and that they will not support, they will actively resist a national health care policy. And I think the rest of the country needs to know that, and the sooner the better.
I absolutely agree. The only way that the Republicans have been able to acquire and hang on to power since World War II, in virtually every case, and Harry Truman pointed this out, I play the clip from time to time, I don't have quick access to it right now, but he made the point that, you know, every 4 years, the Republicans start talking like Democrats for 6 months. And now it's a little longer. Now we're seeing Republicans coming out a year and a half before the elections and talking like Democrats, people like Gordon Smith and Chuck Hagel and whatnot. But the bottom line is that, yeah, you're absolutely right. The Republicans, the conservative, it's not even Republicans entirely, because there are a few Democrats along this line. The basic conservative worldview is that the purpose of government is to protect us from evil people. And the basic liberal worldview on which this country was founded, I might add, is that the purpose of government is that a purpose of government is to protect us from bad people. But the primary purpose, the primary reason why we all got together and created a government, was to allow every person to reach their highest potential. And Republicans and conservatives disagree with that strongly, and therefore they do not support things like public education or Social Security or any kind of programs that help lift people out of poverty, or any kind of affirmative action programs that help traditionally discriminated against people or people facing structural, impediments in the system, impediments to reach their highest potential. They just don't believe government should have any role in that. They basically believe in an aristocracy, and liberals, going all the way back to George Washington, believe that government is here to help people achieve their highest potential, and therefore we should have national health care and we should have public education up to, through, and including college, frankly. Stuart in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Stuart. Got about a minute before we got to take a break. What's up?
Tom, you're a smart person. I found out that from a friend of mine in South Korea, that they've been unloading the depleted uranium emissions, the bunker busters. And how would I go about finding out, getting a confirmation of that?
I don't know. it's Stuart, it's a story that I have not heard about. You mean that they're disposing of these bombs, or that they're simply being transported through South Korea?
That I don't know for sure. They just had warnings about handlings of them and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if
stockpiling up to attack North Korea.
Yeah, that makes a certain amount of sense, and we do have a huge military base. I think we've got 35,000 soldiers there in South Korea. And if they're going to be using depleted uranium weapons, it would make sense that they're there. I think that it's, frankly, a war crime to be using depleted uranium, and something that, for some odd reason, the national press just doesn't want to talk about. They don't want to cover, but should be raised. 16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio.
Now back to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Hey, Air Americans, head over to airamerica.com/Tom Hartman page. Join the Tom Hartman blog and start blogging. That could put you in the running for our daily giveaway at the end of the show today. Louise is going to, David's got the day off. Louise is going to, in a totally whimsical way, pick the comment of the day from our airamerica.com/Tom Hartman page she's going to pick one that she likes the best. It could be a serious comment, a quick, funny one. That person will receive an autographed copy of my newest book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It, which is now out in paperback. Blog with us at airamerica.com/Tom Hartman page. So, 22 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Dave in Los Angeles, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'd like to solicit your help in one thing on this healthcare issue. With the movie Sicko coming out, I'm watching the media and I'm seeing this barrage now, the same common foolishness, I refuse to call it common wisdom, of that if national healthcare comes in, that all private care will go away, that you'll have no choice in this country, everybody will be forced into one system. Private care will not go away. Private insurance won't go away. And, I mean, you'll still be able to get plastic surgery. They frighten these people with this thing and think that we're going to turn into some kind of communist country.
Yeah. No, well, that's the only way that they can win an issue these days is by lying about it. There, England actually, which has something that you could argue is socialized medicine because the government owns the hospitals, owns the clinics, and employs the doctors and writes the paychecks, did have a period of time there where it was relatively illegal for, you know, private health insurance and private physicians, or very difficult, shall we say. And Canada did also. And both of them have opened it up considerably. Most countries that have single-payer systems, so like Germany, where I used to live, there were people who were inside the system and people outside the system, and it was just that simple.
Thanks for clarifying. That's what I meant, is a single-payer system. And I see these executives and these obviously wealthy people like on CNBC saying that they don't want to stand in line. They're not going to be standing in line with all the others. They will have very nice insurance plans provided by their employers that will be outside the system.
And this is why, you know, I was frankly surprised by John Edwards, positively surprised when I interviewed him last week or the week before last, and I said, you know, he's talking about his health care plan and he's got health insurance companies involved in the thing. And I'm like, you know, why? And he said, well, you know, some people are saying we need to go immediately to single-payer health and just put all these guys out of business. He said, but it ain't going to happen. You know, legislatively, it's impossible. They have too much power. He said, so instead, let's open it up so that anybody in America can buy into Medicare, and Medicare is available to everybody, and let the private health insurance companies try to compete with Medicare. It will put them out of business because they can't compete with a company with a system that has no overhead, doesn't have to pay dividends to stockholders, doesn't have to pay million-dollar salaries to CEOs, and people will see it for what it is. And that's the, you know, I'm paraphrasing now, of course, but, you know, if you heard the interview, you heard it. And he said, you know, this is the way to make it happen, an actual practical way to make it happen, which will lead to a single-payer healthcare system. And I think it's a great idea.
Real competition, exactly. And people forget that capitalism taken to its extreme of monopolies, you end up with the same choices that you do in a communist state with a state-run industry. You have one choice for this and one choice at an inflated price and inferior quality.
Right. It's just that you have, it's being run by an agency that literally is not responsible to anybody except its stockholders, as opposed to one that is theoretically responsive to its citizens, although the history of the Soviet Union was that they were only marginally responsive. But good point, Dave. Thank you very much for making it. Ed in Springfield, Oregon. Hey, Ed.
Hi, Tom. Today is an anniversary that is by and far overlooked, and yet is very important in the formation of our country, I think you'll agree, that on this day in 1692, the first witch was hung in Salem, Bridget Bishop. By the end of this year, that year, in 1692, the rest of the colonies had put a stop to it. And by a generation later, they had created a constitution that made a theocracy, as was forming then, from ever becoming the government in our country. And they looked at the Spanish Inquisition and such as that, and they said, oh, this is what happens with theocracies. Inevitably, they go berserk.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't just the Spanish Inquisition. I mean, they looked back at Cromwell in England, and it was
exactly.
it was the followers of Cromwell, the Puritans, who were not the first people to settle the United States. That was Jamestown. That was the British East India Company in 1607, yeah. As I recall. But when the Puritans came over to Massachusetts, they did establish a theocracy there. And in fact, during Thomas Jefferson's presidency, there was very serious concern, and there was talk about it during Adams' presidency, but there was actually serious concern it might happen during Jefferson's presidency, 1800, 1808, that I forget which year it was, that Massachusetts might actually secede from the Union. They were talking about it because they wanted to reestablish it as a Protestant theocracy. And so, yeah, I mean, I'd say by the 1820s, 1830s, that was over and done with. But we've had some very close brushes with theocracy in the United States, and it wasn't pretty. Ben Franklin, in his autobiography, talks about how he was born in Massachusetts and why he left and went to Philadelphia, because he was sick and tired of seeing the witch hanging kind of thing going on. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Thirty-four minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Did I mention our blog last time around? I think I did, but whether I did or not, head over to airamerica.com/Tom Hartman page and join in the daily blog and get in the running for a free copy of Screwed, the Undeclared War Against the Middle Class, and what we can do about it. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Steve in Brainerd, Minnesota on the line. Hey, Steve.
Hey. I just wanted to bring up a point. I'm a disabled veteran. I spent most of last year in a VA hospital in Minneapolis, and 30 years of putting into the Social Security system, and denied, of course, the first two times I put in for it, even with letters from the VA doctors stating I was unable to work, and was suggested I write to my senators, and the only senator that even responded was a Republican, Norm Coleman.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Norm's
running for his life right now.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, the Democrats, even at the state level, when I wrote to them, you know, I never got even a response from any of the Democrats.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And the only response I got was from a Republican, and I even went as far as to, even though he isn't from my state, wrote to McCain, and I got a response from him, too.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. It is true that when politicians are running for public office, and particularly when they're down in the polls, they tend to be a little more responsive than otherwise. But generally, we would hope that all of our elected officials would be responsive, particularly to things like, I mean, this is what you're talking about is really the kind of stuff, particularly typically members of the House of Representatives are really good at. You know, they're very responsive at. Did you write or call your member of the House of Representatives?
Yeah, and I never got a response.
Never got a response. You contacted their local office? I hope not the national one, because sometimes it can take 3 to 4 months for mail to get through to the national office.
I did contact their local offices.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really, you know, I look at the whole system as just haywire, because when I was at the Social Security officers, and not that I'm biased or bigoted in any way, but a Hispanic man that couldn't speak English standing there with his daughter or something, young lady translating for him, and the guy behind the counter says, well, you'll get a check in about a month. And I've been waiting a year since I've been out of the hospital.
Yeah, but you don't know anything about that guy's circumstances or situation. So actually, it does sound bigoted and racist,
well,
Steve.
It is because my situation is not as it doesn't make any difference. I like I said, I've been a disabled vet and I put into the system for 30 years. And
Steve,
I
get it. I get it. And I wish you well in your efforts. And thanks for sharing your story. Joel in Oakland, California. Hey, Joel.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
I hope I do as well. Wanted to check in with you about what you mentioned just at the end of the last hour about apologizing for your 2008 vote. I want to encourage you maybe not to apologize so much. Most of those apologies, and I assume yours as well, are based on hindsight of what Bush has done.
Well, actually, I'm saying that half tongue in cheek, because the fact of the matter is that Louise and I lived in Vermont at the time. We made a very intentional decision to split our vote between Nader and Gore. She voted for Al Gore. I voted for Ralph Nader. And the reason that we wanted to make a statement that we were in support of Al Gore and that we knew Vermont was going to go for the Democratic candidate. There was just, there was not even a remote doubt in our minds. And I wanted the Green Party, regardless of Ralph Nader, I wanted the Green Party to get that 5% of the national vote so that they could get matching money, going into future election cycles. And that's the main reason why I voted for Ralph Nader in 2000. Now in 2004, it was a whole different situation. I just wasn't even going to go there. I just, went out, I campaigned for Kerry, and I voted for Kerry. Frankly, I think Kerry won.
I still hear, and I've heard even on Air America in the last week, people from the Take Back America conference really blaming Nader voters for the election result in 2000. I don't remember who it was. It might have been someone you interviewed, or might have been somebody else.
Well, it wouldn't have happened on my show, or if it did, I would have squashed him like a bug, because the reality is that Ralph Nader did not cost Al Gore that election. Ralph Nader, the Nader votes in Florida arguably may have made it a little harder for Gore to fight the thing, but what happened was the election was stolen by cronies appointed by Bush and Reagan to the Supreme Court. Rehnquist and Scalia had family members working on the Bush campaign, and they're ruling that Bush would be irreparably harmed if the Florida Supreme Court's decision to count every vote is actually allowed to continue.
But
90,000 African Americans being disenfranchised, caging going on, voter intimidation going on, electronic voting machines flipping votes. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I'm sorry, Ralph Nader had nothing to do with any of that.
I think the other point that has to be acknowledged is that the Nader voters, at least those of them that were Democrats who voted Nader in 2000, were doing so, one, out of their consciences or values, and two, because there were and there remain serious problems within the Democratic Party regarding who's governing it, who's got control in terms of corporate power in the Democratic Leadership Council, and all the rest of the stuff. I tend to agree in favor of a progressive takeover of the Democratic Party, and that's where I'm putting my energy now, although I still remain a Green Party member. But, I think the Democrats...
I think you can do both.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, there are factions within the Democratic Party that want to continue to blame progressives and to blame people who don't like the direction that the Democratic Party took in the last 20, 30 years for what has been painted as Gore's loss in 2000. I think we need to stand firmly against that.
I agree. And the one thing that I wish Ralph Nader had done in 2000. And again, this is not by way of blaming the result of that election or the selection on Ralph Nader or the Green Party at all. But just the one thing that I wish he had done, just from a practical political point of view, And that's the problem, is that Ralph is one of these black and white guys who, you know, it's right or it's wrong, period, end of discussion. And practical is not a word that is part of his normal vocabulary. The one thing I wish he had done is what David Cobb was advocating in the Green Party, which is a strategic campaign. In other words, in states that are swing states, like Florida, where you really weren't sure which way it was going to go, the Green Party would say, you know, our candidate is Ralph Nader, but please vote for the Democrat in this state. And if you can, contact a friend of yours in a state like Vermont that's a safe state and have, you know, who might otherwise vote for a Democrat and have that person vote for Nader so that in the absolute state, safe Democratic. Yeah, exactly. And swap out votes like that and have a strategic election so that you don't end up with a Republican president and you end up with enough people voting for the Green Party candidate that the party qualifies for federal matching funds.
Yeah.
And, you know, if Ralph Nader had done that, I think it would have been a great and noble thing and I would, you know, have been a whole lot less pissed off at him down the road. But like I said, I don't blame the outcome of the election on him at all. I'm still apologizing for my 2000 vote for Nader. It's at least 50% tongue in cheek. But
right.
Joel, thanks for the call, and your points are well made. Fred in Springfield, Oregon. Hey, Fred.
Yes, hi. What I wanted to make a point about is that a lot of people, while they seem to think that the Bush administration is actually fighting for oil or even for these Iraqi people, I don't believe that's the case. I think what they're mainly fighting to do is to actually control the American people, because by using this war as an excuse, they're managing to drain our treasury, and at the same time, they're actually draining the money from all these various branches of the government, which they've been doing their best to take away the control over the corporations through.
Right.
And the way I see it, they're actually fighting a war against us. They're trying to steal the money from us, enrich themselves, and it's a form of anarchy. It, to me, it's an anarchy when you have the means to destroy a government from within. You don't need to be a terrorist. You don't need to have a gun to do it. You just need to be rich.
I prefer kleptocracy or oligarchy, but I wouldn't absolutely disagree with you. It is a huge transfer of wealth from working people and middle class people to the very, very wealthy.
Have you ever wondered why they would use the NESC or whatever that secret group that monitors us over the phones and stuff? Why would they investigate groups like the Quakers? And yet they won't investigate a group like the Skull and Bones, who are a bunch of rich guys who have the means to put themselves in the government and destroy it from within.
No, that's a good question, Fred. Maybe we should be lobbying the NSA to check out Skull and Bones. Actually, you know, it is, you know, no tongue in cheek. It is a good suggestion. Or not necessarily. Let me back up. I'm being glib. The NSA should not be snooping on anybody without a warrant. Let's just leave it at that. Jeff in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Tom. You mentioned instant runoff voting last hour, and I want to encourage everybody who thinks it might be a good idea to use it anytime they get a chance. So I would encourage folks to go to their union and change the bylaws, any democratic institution you belong to, and I hope that you do the same on the next Democratic presidential primary poll, basically because that's how people find out that it actually works and that it's
well. That's
simple.
Interesting. So the next time we do one of our straw polls, I could say, "What's your first choice and your second choice?" And tabulate
from
them that way.
From 1 through 3.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, Jeff. Let me chew on that one. With Louise just furiously scribbling them down as they're coming in, it might be a little bit more of a challenge, but we'll see. Our straw poll today, in fact, I just got a note from the Kucinich campaign saying, did I really hear that Dennis won the straw poll on your program? And I sent back a note saying, yep, he was number one, Edwards was number two, and Barack Obama number three.
The Tom Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
And a special end-of-the-week thanks to all the folks who make this program possible. Louise Hartman and David Poole, my producer. Chris Lopresto, and running the board and keeping the spaceship flying there in New York City. And Lauren Kirshner answering the phones and keeping everything working with our calls and just doing some amazing work. Ben Birch with our audio archives over at White Rose Society, and all the folks who are keeping up AirAmerica.com as well. Mike Toth, who does our audio archives, slices and dices some of our, 4 years worth of audio archives, as I recall, over at TomHartman.com. And Sue Nethercott, who runs our chat room. You can get to our live chat room, TomHartman.com or AirAmerica.com. Click on the Tom Hartman page, and there's a link to it. And Sue also running our message boards over at TomHartman.com, and a lot of great commentary and entire community there. Thank you to all of you and to our sponsors and to our affiliates. You make the show possible, and it's much appreciated. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Ron in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Ron, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was before I asked my question, I just wanted to share something. There's I'd like some of your callers to call in and say if it happens to them. For some reason, on my cell phone, I cannot get through to your program, but I had to borrow a phone.
That's weird.
And it only happens with your number.
Maybe you need to check with Alberto Gonzalez on that one. I don't have an explanation, because we don't have, like anonymous call blocking or any of that kind of thing. As far as I know, the line is just wide open,
Yeah. But my question was, I know Jimmy Carter has an organization where he goes to third world countries and monitors elections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And why didn't he do that in Mexico, and why isn't there something similar to that done here in the United States?
I don't know that he didn't do it in Mexico. Are you sure that the Carter?
No, I never heard anything, and I even looked up on his website. Just found that odd why he wouldn't go to our next door neighbor
Ron, I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to the question. You'd have to check with the Carter Center down in Atlanta and ask them. It's a good question. And it would be great to have the Carter Center monitoring elections here in the United States. I know that, members of the European Union or the European Commission or whatever it is, one of the governing bodies of Europe, tried to monitor the election in the United States. In Ohio, they were prevented from monitoring the elections by Ken Blackwell. By the way, we have a winner in our, I don't want to quite call it a contest, but congratulations to T. John KPTK. There you go. Bravo for the blog posting over at AirAmerica.com/Tom Hartman page, War on the Wealthy. T. John KPTK says, they were discussing the war on the wealthy this morning on CNBC. It's about time, since there's been a war on the middle class since Reagan was president. Don't back down. Don't be afraid to stand up and say yes. It's about time to reclaim this country for the majority of the hardworking people. And so, T. John, thank you very much. Drop into our live chat room, and I am Louise with your address information. And Chris, have we figured out a way to get the information back, address folks for?
Yeah, I'll try to get that for you.
Okay, never mind. Chris is gonna take care of it out of New York. We'll get a book to ya. Hutch in Patterson, New Jersey. Hey, Hutch, welcome to the program.
Hello there, Tom. What a magnificent show today! Really, just exceptionally fantastic.
I'm having fun.
Going first to the poll in the second hour, I just want to add my two cents. It makes perfect sense that the most sensible show on the radio would attract people who support the most sensible candidate. That's why Dennis got the most votes in your straw poll. He's the man with the plan. And I tell you, a ticket of Dennis Kucinich and John Edwards would not only take the White House, it would take the Congress, and we'd see real change and transformation in our country. And people ought to give that their real serious consideration. Now, Tom, here's the important thing. I want to beg everybody who's listening to you. We need your help over here in New Jersey. The legislature in New Jersey is, there is a legislator who's putting forward a resolution to impeach the president. And what the politicians in New Jersey need is to hear from people from all over the country that they will get their support if they go through with this. So I'm asking everybody, please go to impeachthem.com. We have an item there. Reach your legislatures. Tell them you support impeachment. You don't have to live in New Jersey to be in favor of justice for the whole country. We need people to help us out here, Tom. And
got it, Hutch. Impeachthem.com, you said?
Yes, impeachthem.com.
Great. Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks for the call, and thanks for letting our listeners know about it. Eileen in New York City. Hey, Eileen. Eileen? Hello? Okay, Lawrence in Berkeley, California. Hey, Lawrence.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I love your show, and I want to suggest a new dimension to it, which is that at least 1 hour a week have an organizer's hour where you have somebody come in who will tell people how to organize, because you say democracy is you, tag, you're it, which is wonderful. But the fact is that most people do not know how to organize and do not know how to do democracy.
You know who's actually doing teach-ins on this is Jim Dean's organization, Democracy for America. I spoke at one last year here in Portland. They did a weekend seminar on how to organize and how to get active, and they're doing absolutely great work. You go over to democracyforamerica.com. It's all spelled out. democracyforamerica.com, and you can sign up for these things. They were charging a small amount for it. As I recall, it was like $50, but you could get a waiver if you were poor. And it was just basically to pay for the cost of, you know, rented space from Portland State University. And it was a really good, solid, intensive program on how to do grassroots activism, how to do canvassing, how to get candidates on the ballot, the whole thing. And I think that, and I know that they're still doing it, and it's one of the best organizations out there. So your point is well taken. And let me recommend democracyforamerica.com. Democracy for America is an organization. Monday, I'll be challenging Ann Coulter, who says liberals are godless. Gary Brecken is here on FDR's New Deal project, and Scott Ritter will be here with his new book, Waging Peace. Plus, the best of the rest of the news and your calls. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. Get out there, get active, and have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.